From KBIA News in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. Are you missing True False or still recovering? Well, today we've got the premiere episode of the True False podcast presented by KBIA. It's hosted by Allison Kofeld of True False and features in-depth interviews with directors and producers of documentary films. You can download more episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Here's the episode.
Welcome to the True False Film Festival.
Listen to a choral piece, a choral work. There are moments where the soprano steps out of the line and she sings her solo and she steps back into the line, and then the bass and the tenor come out and they sing a duet and they step back into the line. But you never lose sense of the whole chorus of voices. And we used that metaphor a lot.
Welcome to the True False podcast, presented by KBIA. I'm Allison Kofeld. In this episode, we're talking about building character in nonfiction. How do you choose which subjects to follow? How do you decide who gets what weight in the story? I spoke to Keith Fulton and Lou Pepe, award-winning filmmakers. Their film, The Bad Kids, played at True False in 2016. Keith and Lou's work includes the documentary Lost in La Mancha and the fictional Brothers of the Head. Their project of short films on education and teachers led them to the Mojave Desert a few years ago. That's where they visited a school called Black Rock High and made The Bad Kids. Keith and Lou discuss their aim to create a mosaic. They follow subjects' lives to build character and, ultimately, offer a film that is a compilation of voices.
There was just an environment in this place. It had been built up to us like, oh, this is where all the bad kids go. This is where the kids who have really difficult home lives, where the kids who are, you know, really impoverished are going to this alternative high school. And we thought, all right, this is going to be a rough place.
That's Keith Fulton.
The second we walked into the school, it was clear that it was a very different school environment. I mean, the kids were just hanging out in the hallways, playing guitar, you know, hanging out, being really friendly with one another. It was a really kind of familial, warm environment. Mm. And the teachers were really kind to the kids and spending individual time with the kids. And it didn't take much observation of the place to realize that this was a very different kind of way of dealing with so-called at-risk kids. So we thought this is an appropriate subject for a long-form documentary.
In this film, I really appreciated the way that you both were overlaying all of these different characters to make sense of the school as a whole. And my first question in this line is what was it like to juggle so many different voices and characters?
We observed without a camera for 2 days.
That's Lou Pepe.
And then we called the principal and said, okay, we think we'd like to come back and shoot for a week and just – we think we'd like to come back and film for a week. You have to be careful about which verb you use when talking about schools. We think we want to come back and film for a week and just see if we think there's a movie here. And so while we would just film and roam around the school, we'd start going out and, you know, sitting down with students and chatting with them for 10 minutes at a time. So it all begins to sort of bubble, and then you see if it's...
This process was actually funny. We always tell our subjects, oh, we're going to have to spend a little time, you know, in this environment and see if it's going to work for us, you know, because it might not work for the documentary filmmaker. It might not be interesting enough, or you might not find people who are being honest with you or being open. And in fact, Lou and I were taken aback by the kids because they're so honest, you know. They were so forthcoming, and I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that no one ever really asks them, you know.
Mm. Yeah, they were finally given a microphone.
It was cool, you know, and in a sense, I think the 2 years we spent at the school was good therapy for a lot of the kids because they liked having us around. They liked the attention.
There was one kid who said to us, I went home and I told my mom, you know, that these documentary filmmakers talk to me and they want to come home with me and film me at home. And she said, why would anybody want to make a documentary about you? And I think that's what these kids are accustomed to, you know. It's like, who cares about you?
One of the grand principles that we refer to in our edit room all the time with this film was it was very important to us to make a film that was about a culture of education and not – although the film has main characters, it was really important to us not to fall into this pattern of telling sort of the classic hero's narrative that you get in all films, but in education films you see them a lot. You know, a kid is struggling with certain – against certain odds and – you know, goes through various arcs and then finally gets her diploma and is successful, so-called, as if the diploma somehow could bring you great success. It's just one step in life. But it was important to us that we give people a taste of what the school at large was like, what the collective consciousness of the school was. So we use the word mosaic in the edit room a lot because we felt like focusing on any one character was going to take away the sense that the school operates as sort of one being.
There's this great guy who works for ITVS named Noland Walker, and we met with him early in our process.
And ITVS is?
Independent Television Service. They're a PBS organization. And Noland said this beautiful thing. He said, when you listen to a choral piece, a choral work, there are moments where the soprano steps out of the line and she sings her solo and she steps back into the line. And then the bass and the tenor come out and they sing a duet and they step back into the line. But you never lose sense of the whole chorus of voices. And we used that metaphor a lot, the same with this idea of a mosaic. We wanted all the tiny pieces to contribute to a greater impression. And we held that out because the history of documentary in the past few decades is very much like character-based. Like, just tell us who are the three people we're supposed to care about, and then we don't need to worry about the rest of them, which was specifically what we didn't want the audience experience to be. If you care about three characters and you go, oh, great, they succeed, and then you say, like, I'm not worried about the others, you're missing the point because – for every Jennifer, Joey, or Lee, who are our three characters that we tend to focus on, they speak for an entire country, about 15 million kids living in poverty. If you forget about the 15 million kids and focus on the three and think that's it, the story's over, then it becomes an easily digestible thing and you go home and you don't worry about it. But we wanted something that left you with a greater sense of the whole as to carry into your life and to think about, how do I interact with this kid? Oh, have I just assumed that kid is a bad kid because he's a teen parent or because he's been in juvenile detention or any of those questions?
Yeah, I mean, I think that also that was sort of the next part of this question was I was thinking about how in the same way that many of these characters – make up the school, I'm thinking about all of the different schools that kind of make up our system. It's kind of – there's this unspoken – it feels like there's this unspoken zoom out that happens, or at least that happened for me when I was watching the film.
We're glad that you get that feeling. The zoom out, the feeling that this little microcosm represents something much larger, is a very delicate balance. I think sometimes – you know, in our editing process, the balance went too far in the other direction and the film felt very diffuse. And yet then the reverse was when we would cut out all the sort of secondary characters. And then the film actually felt kind of small. Mm. It felt like, okay, well, here's a kid who's just struggling to earn his 20 credits for this 6-week period and big deal. When it is a big deal if you view it in the context of the whole. So there was it was a kind of delicate balancing act for us in terms of getting the individual character arcs but not losing sight of the bigger picture.
You're listening to the True False podcast presented by KBIA. We'll be back with more from Keith Fulton and Lou Pepe. Coming up on the podcast.
Yes. As documentary filmmakers, you have an ethical obligation to present the truth, but you have to treat it like fiction.
This is Intersection on KBIA 91.3 FM, and today we're hearing a sample of the brand new True False podcast presented by KBIA.
You're listening to the True False podcast presented by KBIA. On this episode, we're speaking with directors Keith Fulton and Lou Pepe about developing character in their film, The Bad Kids, which airs in March 2017 on PBS. Here's Keith Fulton.
There were many, many cuts of the film, and like Lou was saying, that this balance was always being struck or not struck with between the main characters and the secondary characters. We're always moving those around to see where would they have their best effect. You know, where are you going to zoom out from the one character to know that what that character is feeling at that moment, the whole school is feeling in some sense at the moment. So that was the challenge for us to keep the balance.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing we do is we just have this attitude that the second you shoot it, it's fiction. Mm. Yes, as documentary filmmakers, you have an ethical obligation to present the truth, but you have to treat it like fiction. You need characters, you need movement, you need to build a story that an audience is going to connect with. So one of the things that we always do early in the editing process is say, what is the one moment in the film that is the most intense emotional moment? Okay, once you identify that scene, that's the climax of the film. That's going three quarters or seven eighths of the way through your movie. And everything builds to that and falls off from that. And then you start lining things up and thinking about, okay, which characters do we have strong arcs with? So we had focused on about a dozen different kids in our filming process. You start seeing characters who is like, okay, well, this character's story is actually quite similar on an archetypal level with this other character's story. Mm. They duplicate each other. Mm-hmm. So we got to pick one of them.
And are you thinking, how much of that is starting to occur to you as you're filming? Or is it more just like, we've got the stuff, now we're going to go back and sort through it? Or
I think very little of that actually occurs to you while you're filming. I mean, when you're filming, you know whether you've gotten a deeply intimate scene, a really dramatic scene. Maybe a useful scene that fills in a part of the experience of these kids that you hadn't gotten yet, you know, a facet that you hadn't seen yet. But it's very difficult to be thinking of the big editorial picture when you're filming.
You're still in a process of discovery. I mean, mm-hmm. if you know what the film is about when you start the documentary, you're probably not going to make a good documentary.
I wanted to ask a follow-up of you, Lou, when you were talking about how you rearranged certain scenes or, you know, how sometimes they were flat and then other times you would have a different perspective. Could you give us an example specifically of
– I mean,
I'm sure there are a lot.
There's a scene early on in the film where all the teachers have an after-school meeting, which was something that happened every day. The teachers would eat lunch with each other every day after school, and once a week they would just have a meeting where they did all their staff stuff and talked about what was going on with all the students. And the teachers' meeting was a scene where they talk about what's going on with this kid. Oh, that kid got evicted. Oh, this kid is really depressed because of this, because he keeps thinking what his life is going to be like. And it was a scene that related to none of the characters that we were setting up, but that very much painted a picture of what everybody collectively at the school is confronting. And it was a scene that some people were like, I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in that. And it would come in and go out and get moved later. And we realized, oh, you need to hear that the stakes at this school are not just the stakes for our three main characters, but that they're the stakes for everybody.
Yeah.
And if you don't hear that early on, you don't feel what's at stake emotionally for the whole film.
Yeah, the faculty's talking in the scene about a kid who's basically told the principal that he's terrified that his life is going to be the same as the life of his parents. You know, and that is the struggle for a lot of the kids at Black Rock High School, and a lot of kids, you know, who come from impoverished circumstances, that they feel like, oh, there's just this treadmill, you know. This kid's in our school, in our film, who, you know, are crying, breaking down because they're terrified of the idea of graduating from high school. And Lou and I, you know, when we filmed that particular scene, which was pretty early on, we thought, wow, this is revelatory. You know, when we were in high school, we couldn't wait to get out of high school. You know, and we realized, oh, this girl who's...
They don't know what's next.
No, they don't know. Right. Yeah, but none of us know what's next. But for them, they're thinking what's next is exactly what was next for my parents, you know.
One of the things that we learned about, maybe we didn't learn it, it was just an experience, was that it was super emotional. It was really, really intense making this film. And there would be, you know, school starts at 7:30 in the morning and we'd get there and, you know, we're setting up and kids are coming in and we'd start filming at 7:30 in the morning. And there'd be days where by 10 o'clock it was like, okay, we're done. You know, we just listened to a conversation about a kid who's been evicted. We just listened to a conversation about a girl who's pregnant and her grandmother's kicked her out. And then this kid's been sexually abused. Like, okay, that's all we can take on board today. And I wasn't expecting the filming process to be that emotional.
After the break, Keith and Lou talk about the role empathy played when it came to developing characters in the film.
If you can distill for the audience in 90 minutes or 100 minutes what that emotional journey was for you as you got sucked in, I think that's where there's a kind of like alchemy of empathy in the documentary process that's really exciting when you can make that happen.
This is Intersection on KBIA 91.3 FM, and today we're listening to the first episode of the new True False podcast. It's hosted by Allison Kofelt and features interviews with documentary film directors.
You're listening to the True False podcast. Before we return to our interview, we have a soundscape. This compilation by Tim Pilcher features an art installation from True False 2016 called Two Itinerant Quilters. The underlying concept of the quilters, Lenka Clayton and Joanna Wright, coincides in many ways with Keith and Lou's discussion of overlaying voices and creating a patchwork portrait.
So our project is called Two Itinerant Quilters. We set up a tailor's shop in different environments, and then everybody who walks past our little shop, we harass them and ask them if they will take the shirt off their back and give it to us to become part of our quilt that we're making. So we cut a diamond-shaped piece out of their clothing. They choose a patch and we repair the hole in their clothes. And then the bit that we cut out of their clothing, we turn into a collective quilt that's going to be made out of thousands of individuals. It's based on this amazing profession, which used to exist and doesn't anymore, where in Wales and Cornwall, where we're from, these people would travel around by foot between villages, and they would live with a family long enough to make a quilt, a patchwork quilt, out of bits and pieces of fabric that they found around the home. And then they would move to the next family and make a quilt for them and the next family. And we really loved this profession. It doesn't exist anymore. So that was the beginning of the project. We asked people to tell the stories of their clothing, which when we first asked them, we didn't know if that would, you know, if that would be like an interesting question. Like, do you really think about your t-shirt? But as soon as people like sit down and start thinking about it, we get these amazing stories. People sort of are able to just share this little bit of their history. You know, they survived a hurricane in it, or their grandmother gave it to them and then died the next day, or the sort of more personal the shirt, the better. Because we're making this collective piece that we want to sort of imbue with like thousands of lives that people lived in their clothing before we sort of cut them up.
Now, let's get back to our conversation with Keith Fulton and Lou Pepe, directors of The Bad Kids.
The two tenets of the school are empathy and acknowledgement. And it sounds a lot like what you gave these students when you were filming them was definitely acknowledgement. Do you feel like, what do you feel like you learned as storytellers about empathy and acknowledgement during this process? I'm guessing your empathy radar was pretty high to begin with, but,
yeah.
But what did you learn?
Lou often teases me. My empathy is, what did you call it? Empathy radar?
I don't know. I just made that up.
Your EQ.
Empathy yeah. quotient is extraordinarily high. I do sound when Lou and I shoot together. And in scenes between the principal and students, I would often start crying. And that's how high my empathy quotient is. And it's not a good thing to start crying when you're holding a boom. And you start to sort of miss the target with what you're supposed to be doing sound-wise.
My empathy quotient is actually not very high when I'm filming. To shoot, I have to not make eye contact with the subjects, or it's too easy to become emotionally sucked into the scene. So I actually film looking downwards at a view screen on the camera so that it's all just sort of TV while I'm filming it, which is the way it's just like pictures and framing and am I in focus and all of that.
The sound guy doesn't get to have that kind of distance. You actually have to look people in the eye.
We went through many, many cuts, and we screened the film for lots and lots of people as we were editing, because sometimes you'd change the position of a scene and, like, the whole movie would go flat, and the audiences would be like, yeah, I had no emotional connection to it whatsoever. So it became it was this odd, organic, alchemical thing of trying to figure out where is the sweet spot for this scene or that scene that allows the audience to keep getting more and more emotionally invested and feel what we felt as we were going through it.
I just had something I wanted to say about empathy. Empathy is one of the tools that the teachers use at the school to help the kids, and it is one of the central tenets of how the school operates. But something that we discovered in making the film was what a storehouse of empathy these particular kids are. I learned a lot about what it means to be empathetic and how to learn to be empathetic from these kids, because, you know, you're not a deeply empathetic person unless you're comfortable feeling pain.
If you can distill for the audience in 90 minutes or 100 minutes what that emotional journey was for you as you got sucked in, I think that's where there's a kind of like alchemy of empathy in the documentary process that's really exciting when you can make that happen.
One more question before we have to wrap up. And it has to do with the second tenet of Black Rock that you talked about, acknowledgement. Acknowledgement, I like to think of it as attention. George Saunders talks about attention being just love, those being equal. And I wondered if you had a comment on that, or if you felt like acknowledgement and attention was something that you learned a lot about.
One of the things about the acknowledgement it's so many of the practices at the school are about this. One of the practices is that every morning, the second the attendance is taken, if you're not in school, the administrative assistant at the school is calling your home going, where the hell are you? Well, so what if you overslept? Get up, get dressed, and get your ass into school, which for a lot of these kids is like, oh, someone cares that I was missing.
Yeah, and also, I mean, that connects so deeply with efficacy. Like you not only matter, but you're making a difference by doing that.
And, you know, because they get this acknowledgement, it actually motivates the kids like, oh, I'm going to do more things like that. When I do that, I get a positive reward. Even when kids, you know, make it to school late, at the high school, they're used to having like a finger wagged at them, like, you're a half hour late. And when a kid shows up late at Black Rock, Miss Veland says, I'm so happy you made it to school today. What can we do to help you get here earlier tomorrow? Which is, I mean, the end result is – well, it's in a type of acknowledgement that has a positive and motivating effect rather than a negative and distancing effect. So many of the things at the school are about that type of I see you interaction.
I think one of the interesting things about attention as a concept is that it's not one thing. You know, there's a kind of attention that you want to receive, right? And there's a kind of attention you want to give someone, right? So those are very two different kinds of attention. And I think a lot of times kids from these kinds of circumstances, they come at education wanting the kind of attention that says, well, you know, look at me, I'm a victim, you know. I can't get out of this rut, you know. That might be the kind of attention that they want. In fact, I think our main character in this film, Joey, often wanted that kind of attention. And when you want that kind of attention, acknowledge me as a victim, I can't get out of this rut, then a lot of times a teacher, the kind of attention they will choose to give that student is, well, I'm going to punish you. You know, I'm going to show you how things are really done. You know, I'm going to show you need to toe the line. And I think a lot of times this type of education is about modifying both, you know, the kind of attention a student might want to seek, you know, the better kind of attention to seek, and also for the teachers, maybe the better kind of attention to give. Yeah. So it's about sort of training people on this concept of attention. if that makes sense.
Yeah, and the way that choosing attention or seeking attention can change your own story about yourself and the way other people see you.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And I think that ability to change the story about yourself is like – that's at the core.
That's the story of the film. That is the film.
Yeah. That is the film. That the kids end up with the agency to say, I'm not going to be reduced by everything that's happened to me. My life is mine to write the story of. It's very David Copperfield, right? Whether I shall be the hero of my own life remains to be seen.
Keith Fulton and Lou Pepe's film, The Bad Kids, airs on PBS in March 2017. To find out more, you can visit thebadkidsmovie.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, do us a favor and leave a review on iTunes. That'll help other people find us. We want to thank Keith and Lou for the interview on selecting subjects and building character. The two itinerant quilters were Lenka Clayton and Joanna Wright. We loved their art installation at True False in 2016. This episode was produced by Sarah Kellogg and edited by Bram Sablesmith and Ryan Femuliner. Our theme music was created by Tim Pilcher using sounds of the True False Film Fest. We also featured the song Into the Light by True False busker Marissa Anderson. The music on the itinerant quilters piece is by Lola Tone. Special thanks to Claire Banderas, Steve Dawson, and Mary McIntyre. Join us next episode as we discuss a different aspect of the art and craft of nonfiction. I'm Allison Koval. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for joining us here on Intersection, and thank you to host Allison Kofeldt and producer Bram Sablesmith for sharing the first episode of the new True False podcast. You can download more episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you want to listen to this show again, you can visit us online at kbia.org and find Intersection under the Shows tab. You can also follow us on Facebook to stay up to date with our show. Our producer is Claire Banderas, and our music is Montana Skies. I am Sarah Shariari for Intersection here on KBIA 91.3 FM.